Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, December 22nd, 2018. This is episode 1551. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by On Deck. Are you a small business owner in need of capital today? Well, On Deck can help. With over $10 billion in loans and an A-plus rating from the Better Business Bureau, OnDeck is a lender you can trust. Visit ondeck.com/techguy to learn more and get a free consultation with one of their U.S.-based loan specialists. And by Simply Safe. Protect your home and family with an A-plus home security system. Visit simplysafe.com/twit to learn more. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers. Do we talk about computers? I guess we do. The internet, home theater, digital photography. We got some smartphones to talk about, some smart watches. We've got virtual reality, augmented reality, even real reality. 888-ASK-LEO is my phone number. That's real. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. If you're outside that area, you could still call. It doesn't have to be, you could use Skype or one of them there things to call out. 888-827-5536. It should still be toll free for you. You can also reach us at our chat room, irc.twit.tv. I think of that as the team tech guy, the smart kids in the back of the class who always know the right answer and who helped me out. When you're calling the Tech Guy Show, you're not just calling me, you're calling them. Oh, I'm sorry. You're calling them. You're also talking to a large audience. And I tell you what, I can't answer every question. I can't solve every problem. But I bet you somebody out there listening can. 8888-ASK-LEO, the website where we write all the answers down and give you another chance, if you wish, to answer. Because there's comments there, too. TechGuyLabs.com. And that's free. There's no charge, no sign-up. It's all wide open. Here we are, the last weekend before Christmas. Yes, I'm here live. Yes. You want me to hold up a newspaper to prove that? It is. Yes, I am here, and we will answer questions, and I imagine there are few. Still time to shop. Still time to shop. So you can ask those questions. I'm reading a wonderful book, which I would recommend. I'm a fan of a guy named Yuval Noah Harari. He's actually very popular in Silicon Valley in general because he writes about history. He's a historian at the Hebrew University in Jerusalem. He wrote a book called Sapiens, which I gave to everybody I knew, A Brief History of Humankind. Then he wrote a book called Homo Deus, which is his follow-up, A History of Tomorrow. But the newest book he's written, I think, is the most thought-provoking and one I would highly recommend. And there's plenty of ways you can get kind of some of the data in this book. He's given TED Talks. There's, I see on YouTube, an hour-long talk he gave at Google last month. The book, 21 Lessons for the 21st Century. And he talks about how, you know, really kind of following out the stuff that we talk about every day. We talk day to day about the, you know, kind of current events in technology. Who new smartphone is out? What's the latest best choice for, you know, laptops, that kind of stuff. But he's thinking more long term. I'm told he meditates 3 hours a day, so maybe that's why he can think more long term. I could do about 3 minutes before I get a little too antsy about what the trend lines might mean for us. And that's why he calls his book 21 Lessons for the 21st Century, because it's things we need to start thinking about now. And it's gotten me certainly thinking. He's talking about, one of the things he talks about, which is kind of interesting and scary. And remember, it's notoriously difficult to predict the future. People, even Nostradamus had made a few mistakes. People have a hard time, especially when it comes to technology, partly because you have these giant leaps at some at point. Sometimes they call them paradigm shifts or just discontinuities where something unexpected happened. You know, we've seen a couple of those in human history. The Industrial Revolution, for sure, caused complete disruption and chaos. And eventually we kind of absorbed it, changed us from an agrarian society to an urban society, and changed human life, I think, for the most part, for the better, but not without a lot of wars and famines and other problems. Now we're in the midst of a massive information revolution, which he says, and I think I agree, is significantly more of a disruption than the Industrial Revolution will be or was. And, you know, it's not just the internet, but it's certainly the fact that we can all communicate instantly with each other is a huge change. We're funny because humans, we just, we're like frogs in that pot of water that's getting hotter and hotter and don't even really notice until we're boiled. These things happen gradually enough that we just take them for granted. You're carrying in your pocket, almost everybody, a computer that's faster than the earliest personal computers, that's always connected all the time to the internet, contains very high precision cameras and sensors and microphones. You've got really, this is kind of the thing science fiction authors were writing about. It didn't come out exactly necessarily as they said it would. I remember reading one of my favorite science fiction books, William Gibson's Neuromancer, and he talked about one of his characters having a tablet that had all the world's information, every book ever written, all the world's information on it. And I thought, well, that'd be cool. Well, guess what? I got it now in my pocket. And it kind of crept up without even noticing. So some of the things that Harari talks about that are creeping up without our noticing, the biggest two changes we're going to see, and I agree 100%, we can already start to see this, the rise of artificial intelligence and the rise of biotech. And both of these will dramatically change our world in ways we were not really ready for. The biotech revolution is happening already. We talked a couple of weeks ago about the first human children, we think, born with edited genes, edited using a technique called CRISPR. It's like cut and paste for genes. The doctor in China, who has since disappeared, by the way, cut out a gene that reduced resistance to HIV and cholera and malaria, or no, I guess it was smallpox, and theoretically giving these twins that were born better resistance to better immunity to those diseases, could be all fabricated. But the point really is that it could have happened. Every country in the world, including China, says that's wrong and illegal, but it's the technology's there. It exists. And I expect that we're going to see more and more the ability to do designer babies. In our lifetime. Okay. That's one. Artificial intelligence, we're seeing it slowly. I think part of what's reassuring about artificial intelligence is that everything everybody's said about artificial intelligence up to now, and everything that they claim is artificial intelligence, including Google and Siri and all that, hasn't been too bright, right? It's not. Intelligence seems to be a rather big word for what they're doing, maybe in an inappropriate word, but the fact remains we're getting closer and closer. This is why I think it's really important for all of us, yes, you too now, to understand how technology works so that we can make rational decisions about our biotech and artificially intelligent future. And that's kind of what this show, in fact, my life's mission is about, is helping us understand this. So we can think about it, so we can guide it in the future. Because if we pay no attention, it'll just happen, and you may not like what happens. You know, one of the things that's important about artificial intelligence, one of the things the name kind of lies about, is the notion, that actually it's humans that make it. And anything that artificial intelligence decides or knows is based on rule sets created by human beings, with all our biases and flaws. And so it's really important we understand that. They don't spring out of nothingness, perfect, shiny, like a perfect computer. There is no such thing as we know now, right? They spring out of human imagination and human foibles. So it's important to kind of know that and think about that, because we've got some decisions to make in our near future about whether we want bioengineered kids. And if we do, how we're going to do that and what's going to be okay and what's not going to be okay. And whether we want machines to start taking over things like driving. I think we do. I think we do. Medicine? Yeah, probably. Government? 8888-ASK-LEO. That's what this show is all about. Those are the kinds of things we talk about. And I'd appreciate it if you want to join the conversation, if you give me a ring. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I think it'd be a good time to take a break. Kim Schaffer is here. She's answering the phones. 8888-ASK-LEO. Let's get your calls right after this. Ladies and gentlemen, Kim Schaffer answering the phones, our phone angel.
Good morning.
Kim.
Hi, how are you?
Did you know that you were going to be working this close to Christmas?
Yeah, but I'm working Christmas Day, so this doesn't hurt me at all.
Not here, at the bar?
I am. We open for a few hours on Thanksgiving and
good.
Christmas Day for the old timers.
Everybody needs a drink on Christmas
Day. You gotta have a drink before you see the in-laws, right?
Exactly. And one of those fine sausage rolls, let's not forget.
Well, our kitchen's closed, so it's booze only.
Oh.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a good idea.
Yeah, maybe not. But it seems to work. It's a yearly tradition, and the old soccer players come, or football players.
Do they come in to watch Chelsea and Manchester United and all that?
They do that, but they come in and they sing songs and drink.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it's
you have the soccer hooligans.
It's a soccer hooligans.
Oh, my gosh. How fun. I might be worth going down. Mm-hmm. What? Give them a... No, I probably shouldn't say it out loud.
Mayflower.
Okay,
Mayflower, San Rafael.
San Rafael. Everybody go.
Come see me.
But actually, go when the sausage rolls are in, because those things
are
come mind-boggling.
Come for the sausage rolls.
Come for the sausage rolls. Stay.
The bangers and mash, the pot pies.
I could skip the bangers and mash.
Oh, I do.
Yeah. That's not... Those aren't good for you. No. Not that sausage rolls are anything. not to change the subject, but have you been answering the phones?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, it took people a while today. I think they were sleeping or the coffee hadn't kicked in. But
most radio shows would not be working 2 days before Christmas.
Is it really that close?
Eve is Monday and Christmas Day is Tuesday. I feel like most radio shows would take this opportunity to head to Mar-a-Lago and enjoy the sun and fun and not be working. But no, you and I, first of all, we didn't get the invitation. But
we won't get the invitation.
I don't know. Me and Rush are pretty close. Mm-hmm. But since we didn't, let's answer some calls.
Yeah. So how about Katie in Lake Forest having issues with her Mac and PC formatting?
Oh, I know how that is.
Yes, they don't seem to... It gets sent from a Mac to a PC.
They're confused, aren't they?
They don't look right. The documents don't look right.
Thank you, Kim. And hello, Katie. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, I have to push this button too? Wow, they're making me work today. Hi, Katie.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure. What's up?
So, yes, I do my editing work on a Mac, just in Microsoft Word. I edit students' dissertations. And lately, when they get the finished dissertation back from me, if they have a PC, the formatting is all messed up. So I will put in page breaks and format section breaks and things like that. And then when they get it on their PC, it's a jumbled mess. And I've done it for years, and it's never happened up until maybe a month ago.
Yeah, I know that you probably got that Microsoft Office update on your Mac.
Yeah,
I'm wondering what that did to change everything. You know, they were saying how excited they were to have dark mode, but big deal with dark mode. I want my formatting to work.
Me too. And I did update. So this past week, I did, I think, that new update, hoping it would help. So it's already happening before that.
Oh, it was happening before that.
Yeah.
Okay. So in theory, Office is exactly the same cross-platform. That's the whole point of it, right? You edit on a... You're sure that you're not using typefaces that are not available on the...
Nope, only Times New Roman.
Times New Roman. Yeah, that's the safe thing to do because then you know it's on every machine. And that could screw up formatting. The other thing maybe to do is the printer setup. Make sure that you haven't... Office, as a convenience to you, tries to format the document as it will show up on the printer. And it may be that your printer setting got changed.
That is a possibility. We did get a new printer recently.
I would go to change the go to the print setup and change it to. There must be a generic or default. The other thing is the other that can happen is what you know when you save it, you have a choice of different formats to save it in. Make sure you're saving it in the .docx format.
Yes, okay. I am.
Okay.
Yeah.
I presume the students wouldn't want it back. Yeah, I bet it is. I presume the students wouldn't want it back as a PDF. They want a Word document.
No, yeah, they need it. They need it in Word. I mean, at this point, I'm even considering what cheap PC that I could get that's just for the purpose of using Word. I don't need a fancy PC. I mean, I don't even know if that's a better option just to
just yeah, no, you shouldn't create. Need. No, we can solve this. This doesn't sound right. I'm not sure what's going on, but it doesn't sound right. The whole theory behind using Microsoft Word, which you don't need to on a Mac because you've got Pages, right? You don't need to, is that you want compatibility with the greater world out there, the Windows world. And I'm using Word. It should be the same. So you're saying the page breaks are different?
Yeah, and the pagination. And section breaks too.
So what you need to do is find a friendly student who's willing to do some experimenting with you. You know, somebody who's not paying you, or who's paying you, but likes you so much that they're willing to try to solve this problem with you. Because what we're going to try to do is figure out if there's ways to do this that don't break this. The first thing I would do is save it, besides in docx, maybe save it as an RTF as well. Just to see. Now, the problem with RTF is it won't preserve all of the formatting. I think it'll save page breaks. I think even section breaks, certainly fonts. Just see. That might be another format to save it out as, is rich text format. That's also a Microsoft format, but it's an older format. And when you're getting these documents, is it happening to everyone that you send back?
It has been, yes. And okay. My husband has a PC, so I've been just checking on his computer before.
Oh, well, your husband can be the friendly yes. party. You can send them to him and see, because he's seeing the same issues.
Yes.
Okay, that's good. That's a good sign. I would save it in some different formats, docx, doc, and RTF at least, just to see if one of them works better.
Okay.
Make sure, look at your printer setup and make it as generic and vanilla as you can. It may be when you got the new printer that you set it up for your new printer, and that's not the same as their printer. And I'll have to look and see what other things could happen. I mean, this shouldn't be happening. But I think a little experimentation with your husband's PC. You shouldn't have to get a PC. This should all just work. Let me do some research. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Get it.
Yeah, I'm sorry we had to take a break there. I'm sorry, what did you just say?
That's okay.
Yeah, I'm still here.
Me too.
Okay. Let's see. Let me think what else. What else could be causing that? Try printing it out as a PDF just to see if the PDF gets it right.
Okay.
You know, you can always, in the print dialog, save as PDF. And just see if that looks, and see if that looks right. Not that that's going to be, you know, your default, but it'll give you some idea of what's going on.
Yeah,
why
where are the issues
screw
happening?
Up sections? Why would it screw that up? The other thing you can, you might want to look at is the default style sheet. So, Microsoft Word has a default style sheet that actually is the one you want to use. If the students are using theirs and you're using yours, then you're modifying the existing default style sheet. You might want to make sure that didn't get modified somehow.
Okay.
And that's fairly important. That could have changed everything. And you, of course, make sure when you're printing that you're printing, or rather when you're setting up that you're printing to a letter sized page, not some other size page, because that's where it's making the section and page break decisions.
Yeah, you've given me a lot of good stuff to look at. Who knows?
Yeah,
why it started, but it's like when I create the table of contents, and let's say chapter 2 begins on my Mac on page 14, and then I send it to someone with a PC, and not even with just page breaks, but even like my Word doc Mac will have 15 lines of text, but then their PC Word doc will have 14 lines of text, even on a non-page break page.
Yeah, and that's the setting. The settings for it could be the line height. There's a lot, you know how you can change all that? If the line height settings were different, that could do it. Something like that. Okay. I think this now kind of points to either the printer definition or the default style sheet.
And, okay, I'm going to look at those.
Yeah, I think you can revert to the default, to the original. That's probably what you want to do. Let me just really quick look at that. But Word, default, style, reset. I bet there's a way to reset the default styles, because you want to make sure you're using the default styles.
Yeah.
I don't see. I see ways to change the default, but you don't want to change the default.
Right.
I bet you know, thinking about it though, you're applying a style sheet and saving it as the file and sending it to the student. So they have your style sheet. I think it's the printer. I think it's almost certainly the printer.
All right, great. I would not have even thought of that. I appreciate it.
All right, good luck. Thanks for calling.
Thank you, Leo.
Bye.
Bye.
Delete normal dot. Will that do it? That's certainly the default. Different printer, different look. I think it's the printer, right? So this article that you sent, this is, by the way, Leo Notenboom, who's got a website called Ask Leo. It's his name. What can I do? Different printer, different look. That's right. So that could be, she got a different printer characteristics. I would make it as generic as possible. Different system, different look. That's fonts. Yep. Solution PDF. When we covered all of this, it should just work. And it did work. That's what's interesting. It's time once again for the bizarre music that signals the appearance like magic. It's like if you say Beetlejuice three times, if you say bump-de-bump three times, Scott Wilkinson appears. He's our home theater geek. And how did Tuba Christmas go this week?
Oh, it went great. It was wonderful.
Scott leads the tubas.
I do.
How many?
117 tubas.
Imagine, if you will, ladies and gentlemen, 117 tubas playing mostly in concert.
Mostly.
Is it hard? No, it's not. Can you tune a tuba?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
now, I don't bother for Tuba Christmas.
Oh, because out of tune is a little okay?
It's okay. Yeah, it's like it's a chorus effect.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't want to all sound the same.
No.
Slight deviations. So the first tuba doesn't come out and press a button and go.
No, sadly not.
Lower A, and then all the tubas.
Yeah, right. No? When you get all the tubas playing the same note like that aren't quite in tune.
There's a beat, like, right?
Yeah, it sounds like B-57s flying. Over. Yeah, right.
Anyway, I'm glad it went well, and if you missed it, I'm sorry you did, folks. But put a pin in your calendar for next year, because you got
next December. Yeah,
next December you got to go to Tuba Christmas.
That's
out
right.
By the cemetery.
That's right.
What do you want to talk about today, Scott? I know it's something to do with home theaters.
Well, actually, this week I went and saw Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
I didn't even know there was such a thing.
Oh, really? You didn't? You
is
didn't
this
hear
a
about
movie?
This movie? Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, this is not your typical Spider-Man movie.
Well, that's a relief.
Oh, it's seriously. In fact, the movie starts with, all right, let's do this again. Peter Parker gets bitten by a radioactive spider. They make fun of it.
That's funny. Is this based on the play or something? What is the story on this?
No, the story is actually very interesting. It turns out that there can only be one Spider-Man in each universe, but there are multiple universes,
and
therefore there are multiple spider people. And they all start converging into presumably this universe because of the evil guy's device that breaks down the barriers between the universes. And so we get a number of spider.
Is Tobey Maguire in this one?
No.
So that's a universe that we shall not tap. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
This is the Tom Holland universe.
One of the Spider-Men who show up.
Or is it the Andrew Garfield universe? Or is it the Drake Bell universe? There's a lot of Spider-Men.
But this one is unique in many ways. For one thing, one of the spider people who show up is Peter Parker as a middle-aged paunchy guy.
Wow. He got bit late in life,
yeah. There's a woman spider person. There's a Japanese anime spider person.
Oh, this actually sounds kind of fun.
It's really fun. Now, it's important to understand this is an animated movie. That's another thing.
Okay. Is this animated like cartoon animation, or is this Pixar style animation?
It's neither. It's very interesting and unusual. It sort of combines Pixar type animation with comic books. It's actually a movie that looks like a comic book. They use a lot of comic book elements in it, including, I found very interesting, there's a kind of an overlay on the entire image, which looks like if you look at a comic book up close through a magnifying glass, you can see the little dots, the individual little dots, and they're different sizes and different densities. There's a very subtle overlay of that look over the entire image. In other places, you see look like registration errors. You know how they print comic books with one color than another, and if they aren't perfectly aligned, you see a little fringe around certain images.
Yeah.
You see that in this movie sometimes.
Oh, so it's supposed to be, like it's a badly printed comic book.
Exactly.
Wow.
And they use mocap as well as full CGI.
Oh, that's interesting. So that means that it's not animated just by hand.
No.
That they had actors play out the scenes and then in special motion capture suits and then turned that into animation.
Yep.
Interesting.
Exactly.
Interesting.
It's really interesting. The story is very interesting and unusual and not what you would expect. The Spider-Man in our universe or in the main universe of the movie is actually a mixed race, black and Puerto Rican, I believe. Teenager.
I always thought Spider-Man should be a Puerto Rican teenager in Brooklyn. Always thought that. Okay,
and let me tell you, the Atmos. I went and saw it in a Dolby Cinema, of course.
Yeah.
And the HDR, high dynamic range, was very good. Not the best I've ever seen, but really good. But the Atmos soundtrack, man, oh man, they had stuff happening all over the place all the time. It was really, really good. So if you can see it in an Atmos theater, it may already be out of Dolby Cinema because there are a number of, holiday movies coming up that have been graded in Dolby Cinema. Mary Poppins might be in there now. Aquaman is coming up. In fact, Aquaman just started. I haven't seen that one yet, but this one's Into the Spider-Verse.
It sounds like in an Atmos theater so you can
hear
the sound.
Yes, exactly. Oh, yeah. Spider Noir, played by Nicolas Cage, voiced by Nicolas Cage.
Oh, that's noir, all right. This looks kind of fun. It's a blockbuster. It's the best selling.
It's huge
all over the world. It's been the number one in China, apparently.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It's highly recommended. Okay. Highly recommended.
Okay.
But see it in an Atmos theater if you can.
All right.
Definitely.
In HDR. And then
if you can.
Now,
yeah.
Here's the funny thing, because these days, because I have such a nice HDR screen, and I feel like I have a kind of a better environment at home, I often, even a movie like this, where, it would be a big screen movie, are people, I guess, are still going to movies.
Yeah, they are.
But I feel like I can see, this will look better at home. Is that possible?
In most, compared to most theaters, you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
It will look better at home.
Yeah, like if I go to the Grauman's Theater, I guess, maybe, but
Grauman's, what used to be Grauman's,
whatever
Chinese,
they call it now,
it's now TCL Chinese.
Okay.
The TCL company, the TV company that we talk about quite often on this show,
Chinese TV company,
they bought the naming rights to that theater, so it's now the TCL Chinese, but it has an IMAX, a laser IMAX,
so that might really be good
theater. So that's probably pretty good.
Can't beat that at home.
No No. I don't think you can beat Dolby Cinema at home in a way, because you can certainly get brighter at home.
Yeah.
And you can get at least as good black levels, but yeah. Will you have, you know, 30 or 40 speakers around you at home?
Yeah, no. The sound is hard, isn't it?
The sound is harder to replicate at home.
Yeah.
Plus, the screen in a Dolby Cinema or any commercial cinema is so much bigger. It fills up more of your field of view. Right. So in order to do that at home, you need to be sitting pretty close to the screen.
I like 2 feet from the screen. I'm right
there. Well,
there you
go. Then you
I just need to improve the sound.
Correct.
I have to get some. I do have to go Atmos, I think. That's going to be a little bit of a project, but I think that's the next step.
Just give me a call. I'll be glad to help.
Uh-huh. What kind of Atmos speakers do you use? We had that Vizio soundbar that was Atmos. That was kind of a poor man's Atmos, but it worked.
It is a poor man's Atmos.
Yeah.
Better to have actual Atmos speakers. I have some up-firing Atmos speakers that fire off my ceiling and reflect off the ceiling rather and come back down and do it that way.
Maybe
that's
next week
way to do it.
We can do some shopping for
there
Atmos,
you go.
Atmos
I'd love
sound.
To spend your money.
Scott Wilkinson loves to spend your money. He's the home theater geek, and he joins us each and every week to talk about big screen TVs and surround sound and the like. Thank you, Scott. Have a happy Christmas.
Thanks, you too.
We'll see you next year. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You know that, right? No show next week.
I was going to verify that with
you. Yep.
I heard you say it earlier while you were talking, but...
See you next year.
See you next year. The first Saturday of January will be the day before I leave for CES, so we can talk about what I expect to see at CES
time.
It is.
That's amazing.
It is.
It comes so fast.
I know.
All right, let me get your timer up here, and you may have the floor.
Thank you. Yes, Eric Duckman, it is the TCL Chinese Theater. Dr. Mom Grandma is correct. It was Grauman's, then Mann's.
Whoops.
And now it is TCL. Exactly right. And that makes sense, TCL buying the naming rights to the Chinese Theater since it's a Chinese company. I am Special UK. Happy Tuba Christmas. And to you as well. Krampus X, yes, you're right. My inbox is full of CES PR. No doubt about that. FOMO, no one's TV is as big as a movie theater's. That's correct. But you have to also take into account how much of your field of view does the screen fill. And in a movie theater, the screen is huge, of course. And you sit farther back than you would in your home. So as Leo just said, he sits... I doubt that he really sits 2 feet away from his TV, but it's close.
Pretty close. 5 feet.
Pretty close. Five feet, maybe. That's half the distance that most people sit from their TV.
Right.
So in that case, yes, your field of view is filled much more with that screen. So if you can fill your field of view to the same degree that you do in a movie theater, then it doesn't matter. You know, the visual experience is going to be roughly the same. But as we were talking about on the show, the sound quality may not be as good. Now, if you have a full Atmos system at home, then you can get really close to the actual Atmos experience in a commercial cinema. So I still like going out to the cinema for certain movies because I like to experience them as the creators intended for the theater. I actually enjoy being in a crowd. And I know a lot of people don't, and I accept that. That's totally fine. But I kind of like the communal experience. So that's just me. Maybe I'm crazy. Emily the Strange is asking, what's been on my plate recently? Any projects lined up? Well, yes, I have a few that I'm working on. I'm hoping to gather some more at CES. I'm going on my own dime. Which ain't cheap, but it's an investment in my career. So I'm going to go. I've got some meetings set up and some things that I'm going to pursue and presumably, hopefully, get some more gigs. This fall has been pretty full for me in other personal ways, unfortunately, which has been unfortunate. But that's winding down now, and I'm slowly getting back to normal, and I do have some projects, so thanks for asking. I haven't had as much time to pursue them as I would have liked, but that's what life does to you sometimes. Anyway, 37 seconds here. Beatmaster, in theory, VR would win, and you're correct. VR is one way to experience movies and have a wide field of view, and I've always thought that would be an excellent way to watch movies, except for the isolation and except for the fact that the resolution isn't as good as it needs to be. I can see the pixel structure easily in every VR gear thing I've put on. I mean, it looks like low-res TV to me. So when they get to 8K or something, that's one thing 8K will be really good for.
You stick around for the top of the hour?
You betcha.
All right. See you then. Now that's Spider-Man, the original. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Shooting spider webs out of my fingertips here. Line 2, Chuck in Fontana, California. Thanks for hanging on, Chuck. Leo Laporte here. Hello, Chuck.
I'm here.
Hey. Leo,
thank you.
Merry
Christmas. Merry Christmas to you and all of your tribe out there.
Thank you. Thanks for calling. Merry Christmas to you, too.
I've been working on thinking about this for 5 years.
Okay.
That's how long we've been in this house. And I have an older surround sound system, 5.1. And the house we were in before, it worked perfect because I had a 20 by 20 family room. But now we're in this new house, and the room is 14 by 21. And I've been racking my brain trying to figure out where to place speakers for the surround sound.
I think this is a Scott Wilkinson question. Fortunately, Scott couldn't get his tuba out the door,
shame on him.
He's stuck here. it's long or wide? 14 by 21.
It's long.
Long.
Good. That's exactly what you want.
And the TV sits. You know, looking at the TV, it sits in the corner on the right.
Middle of the wall?
Sometimes people don't think TV's the most important thing in the room. That's why, Scott.
How can that be?
I'm thinking your spouse put it in the corner.
Well, no, actually, we both did because the wall where we put the TV was closed. And before we moved in, we had the wall opened up. So she could look into the other room so she could enjoy the fireplace.
Oh, so there's a hole in the wall where the TV goes.
Yeah, exactly right. So looking down the room, the TV's in the right corner. And on the left wall is a large 12-foot window. And she has bookcases on the opposite wall. And we sit in a couple of very comfortable chairs at the far end of the room, for the most part.
20 feet away?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's too far. How big's the TV?
It's a 65-inch.
Do you wave at it when it comes on? Hello, TV! Really? How are
you? Yeah, we upgraded from the 57, so. Because the old one died on us.
Yeah.
Are you at least sitting in front of the TV, or are you going to have cricked necks the whole time?
Well, that's why we sit at the opposite end of the room, because we have the two easy chairs there.
See, you're looking down the pipe at the TV.
Well, yeah. I mean, is there any way to put the chairs sort of so that you're more square to the TV?
Well,
you know what I mean?
The chairs are in the corner, and they're both at the looking at the TV. And the TV is on a diagonal to the corner of the wall. It's not square on the wall.
Well, that's what I mean. And so
your best bet is headphones, my friend.
Yeah, I'm afraid so. I don't know. Boy, you've got a weird
Here's the question. Do you want to fill the room with sound? You probably do, right?
Oh, not necessarily. We just for mainly watching we're watching DVDs and that. You know, in our fifth wheel trailer, we have a surround sound system in that thing, and it works great.
I bet.
But it kind of.
But you're a little closer to the TV in that thing, I bet.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. And
well, boy, the fact that you're at a diagonal in the room makes speaker placement, to get to your original question, very difficult.
Right. I've been doing some research, you know, looking on the internet, and I got to one website, and I said, yeah, the room like that, it's just not even worth the effort. So I thought,
I'm not sure I would agree with that. I mean, if you want to really...
The ideal situation with a TV is a TV in the middle. You're sitting on a couch 10 feet or less away from it. You have speakers on the left and the right of the TV, a center channel over the TV. You have surrounds roughly where your ears are to the
left. A little behind.
Slightly behind the couch to the left and the right. And if you want to have full surround, you know, the seven-channel surround, you'd have two more that are kind of more behind you, right? And
correct.
So it's kind of a square, you know, kind of a environment, you know?
But short of moving the TV over to another wall, which we could do, but then it's we've got the large window behind us.
Oh, man, and if that's going to be throwing light on the TV, you're going to get tons of reflections. That's not going
to I don't know where you'd put the speakers. I mean, would it work to have the speakers closer to where he's sitting,
No, Scott? To tell you the truth, what I would do is
the center is going to have to be over the or near the TV, right?
Near the TV. The center's got to be the voice over is coming or below from. The TV.
Yeah.
The right and left can be on either side of and the right front, right and left can be on either side of the TV, right?
Correct. Okay.
I would put the ceilings in the surrounds in the ceiling.
Right. That's what my wife wants because she doesn't like wires hanging all over the floor.
Sure. Well, I would put them in the ceiling or on the ceiling. That's a lot of work, you know, to install ceilings speakers in the ceiling and then run wires and so on through your attic. I mean, that's not a trivial thing, but that to me would be the best way to do the surrounds and reposition your chairs in some way to get a little closer to that TV.
It's a little tricky because you don't want the surrounds to be louder than the left and right channel.
No,
and
that's
they're
true.
They're going to be closer to you.
True, but you can adjust their level in the receiver.
Yeah. Would Odyssey or one of those automatic sensing things, that'd help.
Yeah.
So whenever you put the speaker, it sounds like really what you're going to have to do is put the speakers as best you can. And then use if your receiver or your TV has this capability to automatically configure. Odyssey is one. There's other ones, right? Audessey.
Yeah.
Run that. They'll have a mic that you put where you sit, and it will then set the volume levels on all of the speakers so that at least it doesn't sound like the surround is louder. That's very disconcerting. You're watching a football game and the beer guy's louder than the people on the field.
Yeah, right.
It's more accurate, perhaps, but disconcerting. Hey, I appreciate the call. That's fun. I imagine for you sometimes, Scott, to be given these challenges.
It's true. Yeah,
this is a big challenge.
That's a big challenge. Now, Lumpy in the chat room has said blackout blinds on that window.
Oh, there's more and more. There's so much stuff to do to fix this.
Yeah, yeah.
Basically, enjoy it as best you can.
Yep.
Is that's the answer, Chuck?
That's the answer. To that,
I thank you, and thanks for hanging out, Scott. It's always great. I can always go to Scott and say, "Hey, I don't know. you're more diplomatic than I am, Scott. I would just say get some headphones and be done with it. Headphones would actually be a fairly decent solution.
Yeah, they would. That's true. You
know, wireless headphones. Sennheiser makes them.
But you have to get two of them if it's him and his wife in the recliners.
Yep. We're going to take a little time out. Top of the hour is next. Catch up on the news of the world. And we'll be back with lots more. We've got Johnny Jett, our travel guru, coming up. We've also got more of your calls at 888-ASK-LEO. And once again, a reminder that the website has answers to your questions, too. Not just from today's show, but from all 1,550 shows at techguylabs.com. It's free. There's no sign up. And if you have a solution for one of our callers and you can't get through to answer on the phone, you can always leave a comment there. There's no charge, no sign up. techguylabs.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. Yeah, da, 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 da. All right, Scott, it's all yours for the remainder.
8 minutes, really?
It's always been 8 minutes. Well, unless Leo uses it up. It's just you only see 510 seconds. You don't know the difference.
I gotcha. Okay. Yeah. Well, 8 minutes is good.
Yeah, have fun.
Thanks. So Lawn Dog, I was typing a response to Lawn Dog here, and I figured I'd wait till here since I was on that last segment. When you have a room with a slanted roof and using 7.1 surround, it's best to point the up-firing speakers, meaning the Atmos speakers, which would be 7.1.2 or 0.4, that last number, in the direction with the roof line so the sound travels up and away, or should the sound bounce off the slanted part of the roof? If you have a slanted roof, up-firing Atmos speakers won't work. So there's no good way to do it. So I would get this is with people with slanted roofs and they want Atmos, it's tricky. It's difficult. You need actual speakers in the roof, in the ceiling, and they have to be able to point more or less straight down. Typically, they're angled a little bit. If they're behind you, they're angled towards you. And if they're in front of you, they're angled back towards you. So how do you do that in a slanted ceiling? Well, you'd have to maybe build some sort of thing that kind of cantilevers them out flat like so. It's not easy. Very, very tricky to do. But up-firing Atmos speakers on a slanted ceiling, I have yet to hear of a successful way to do that. It just doesn't work. So, sorry. Now, Beatmaster has pointed out, I mentioned earlier that I was looking for an 8K VR helmet, and Beatmaster points out that there is one, and I did know about this one called Pimax, P-I-M-A-X, and they do have an 8K, and last time I looked at it, it wasn't available yet. It was like in prototype form, and we didn't know when it was going to come out. Maybe it's now out. But it ain't cheap, $900. And if you want the hand motion controllers, that takes it up to almost $1,100. So that's expensive. But it is the one VR headset that I am most interested in because of its resolution. Maybe it will get rid of the screen door effect, and I won't see the pixel structure. And if that's the case, then yeah, I'm all for it. I'm not sure I'm going to spend $900 on it, but maybe I can get one for review. I'm liking that idea. But anyway, that is an 8K version. And I just looked at the specs. And it's actually 4K. Let's see if I can get the specs here. My computer's running a little slow. Here it is. It's actually 4K per eye. It's 3840 by 2160 per eye. So it's not really 8K. It sort of is. It's 8K total horizontally, but 4K vertically. So still, that should be really, really good. So I'm looking forward to trying that out. I think that should be quite good if it's supported well, you know, if you can watch movies on it. I mean, geez, if you could plug an Ultra HD Blu-ray player in there and just watch a movie on it, that would be very, very cool. Let's see. Oh, I got a lot of questions about speakers today. VA3 ETS. I've got a virtual pipe organ set up. Yeah, man, I'm digging that. And the speakers I have here are a pair of Yorkville YSM6s and a Yamaha HS8 subwoofer. For some reason, 32-foot pedal stops sound more like 10 and 2/3 stops rather than true 32s. Could this be because of the placement of the sub or the frequency response of the sub? Probably both. A 32-foot pedal stop, if I'm not mistaken, the lowest note is like 16 hertz. Is that the 32-foot stop? Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that's what it is. In which case, you need a serious subwoofer to reproduce that well. And an expensive subwoofer is what that means. And the HS8, I'm certain, doesn't cut it. You could potentially boost the bass a little bit by putting the subwoofer in the corner. if it's just not putting out 16 hertz, which it certainly an 8-inch subwoofer will never be able to put out 16 hertz. It just won't do it. It'll be zero output. Then it doesn't really matter. So, boy, that's super great that you have a virtual pipe organ. Yeah, the 32-foot stop is like, oh, man, that is super low. You need a serious TV, a serious speaker, subwoofer for that. Lumpy does have blackout blinds. That's what I was going to say. That guy with the that I spoke with on the phone with a TV in the corner, put the TV on the long wall. It's not ideal, but it's better than what he's got. And put blackout blinds or curtains on the opposite window. And then when you're watching TV, just close those blinds. Then you can put the speakers in a symmetrical configuration that works. So that's what I would do there for sure. Let's see here. Yeah, they should. Yeah, a lawn dog. Getting back to the Atmos on a slanted ceiling. Yeah, I've also often thought about putting them, the overhead speakers, on a pole that comes down from the ceiling and drops the speakers down to, say, for example, where the slanted ceiling meets the wall. Whatever that height is, it would be, or what would be the top of the flat ceiling, put the Atmos speakers down that far on a pole hanging from the slanted ceiling. That would probably be the best solution of all. You still have some acoustic problems because the sound from that speaker, from all the speakers, would go up into that slanted ceiling and bounce around in ways that it wouldn't in a rectangular room. So that'd be kind of weird. Let's see. Dr. Mom, Grandma, hey, glad to see you here. I'm tearing apart the sound system in my new home. Quick question, how do I check the specs for built-in ceiling speakers? I'm not sure I know what you mean, the specs for built-in ceiling speakers. I want to put in the strongest amp I can, but don't want to blow the speakers out. Ceiling speakers are already in the room, in the ceiling. Can you find out what the make and model are? Is there any way to do that? That would be the only way to know, really. We could look it up with that, but that would be the only way to know is to somehow determine – get your grandkids or your kids to crawl around in the attic, if necessary, with a flashlight and look at the back of those speakers, try and find out the make and model. And if you do, I can certainly help you. Just email me with that information and I can help you with what the power handling capability of those speakers is.
Scott, as always, you're a gentleman and a scholar.
Thank you so much.
Have a wonderful week. Have a wonderful two weeks.
2 weeks. And have a great Christmas.
We'll talk CES. You too. Have
we
a great Christmas.
We will talk CES. Thanks
right.
a bunch.
Thanks, Scott.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I have to fix this. It's driving people crazy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. We're talking smartphones. We're talking smart watches. We're talking tech. 8888, ask Leo's the phone number. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, you want a little hand holding on the information superhighway. We used to say that 20 years ago. 8888. Ask Leo is the phone number. If you want to talk, I would like to talk. You all saw that YouTube video. I'm sure you did. Everybody in the world saw it. Loved it, though. Mark Rober is a former NASA engineer who has a podcast. It's actually, I shouldn't call it a podcast. It's a YouTube channel, I guess, right? And he does a little hacking and building and stuff. He had a very clever idea. It took him only 6 months to do it. He'd had some problems with package theft, people coming onto his porch and stealing packages. So he thought, I got an idea. What if I made a booby-trapped package for them to steal? So he decided, what would be valuable? Well, an Apple HomePod. They're about $400 or $500, right? And I could just put it in the HomePod box, so it'd be obviously a HomePod on it, and then put a fake
mailing label on it. If the thieves were clever, they might have noticed that the name on the mailing label was the name of Macaulay Culkin's character in Home Alone. It might have given him a little Kevin McAllister, might have given a little warning that maybe this isn't all it seems. They would, and he's got video of it because he was smart. He put, okay, this booby trap box has, it's worth more than a HomePod. Four, not one, not two, not three, but four smartphones in it, each with their camera running, connected to the internet. Because he wants to get video of the booby trap going off. Then inside it, there's an engine that spins that is loaded with very fine glitter. The kind of glitter that's really hard to get out of your hair, your clothes, your car's upholstery. Really hard. Like, you're going to have glitter on you for months. Your significant other is going to say, honey, have you been dating strippers? What's going on here? Why is there glitter in everything? So that's booby trap number one. But that's not, as if that were not enough. Apparently, and I learned something in this video, you can buy aerosolized noxious odors. Stink bombs. A little aerosol can. So he put a little motor in there that every every 10 seconds does five spritzes of stink bomb material. And he did that for a very good reason. He wants the thieves to be so offended after the glitter goes off by the smell coming off this thing that they'll throw it out the window and leave because he wants to recover the smartphones. So the glitter bomb trap he's got in the video, which, by the way, it's been out for a week, has 45 million views on YouTube. He has in the video a number of thieves and their reaction to being glittered and then stink bombed. It's pretty funny. It's pretty funny. I recommend it if you haven't seen it yet. I'm sure you have it. You've seen it on your local television news. You've seen it everywhere. But it's on YouTube. Mark Rober, R-O-B-E-R. So YouTube.com/Mark Rober. New ideas in science and design. Clearly this guy, I mean, he spent, must have been hundreds and hundreds of dollars, more than $1,000 on this thing, and 6 months building it. It was, but you know, this is what he does. That's what's amazing about him. Before that, he built a dartboard that would move so that you could always get a bullseye. That only took him three years. But if you haven't seen Glitter Bomb versus Package Thief, Mark Rober, you're one of the few. He's a crazy guy. This guy's amazing. This is what YouTube's great for. And a lot more likes than the YouTube Rewind video, which came out. Every year YouTube does a look back at the year. They call it their Rewind. Their Rewind for 2018 has 146 million views. Came out December 6th. But it's also the most disliked video on YouTube with 12 million dislikes. I'm sorry, it's now 13 million dislikes. Mostly because they didn't put PewDiePie in it, I think, who's the number one character on YouTube, 77 million subscribers. I think that's probably why. But it starts off with Will Smith's in it, and really what it is, the point of it is to, I think, honor YouTube's stars, the big names on YouTube. And unless you're under 25 and watch YouTube religiously, you probably won't recognize a lot of the people in here. This year on YouTube's Rewind, I'm glad they put credits. So if you don't recognize Lucas the Spider or Ninja or Ms. Yeah or Bear Hug, you can, there's a little description of who each of them is. YouTube's Rewind. Now, as long as you're on YouTube, a couple of things to watch. 8888 Ask Leo is the phone number. We'll put links to both of those videos in our show notes if you want to, at techguylabs.com if you want to see them. Back to the phones we go. Jeffrey, Westchester, New York. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Jeffrey.
How are you today? Can you hear me?
I hear you great. I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. You're a savior because my wife and the kids are doing clothes shopping. So
around me. All right. Have you seen that Instagram feed of guys shopping with their families in malls, falling asleep in the armchairs they provide for just those people? It's called Miserable Men. If you've not seen it, today you are a miserable man.
I am, but talking to you, you're putting me in a great mood.
Oh, good.
I start to walk into Best Buy, the Mecca, to buy a new toy.
Oh, yeah. See, it's people think guys don't like to shop. It's not that we don't like to shop. It's the choice of things to shop for that's critical.
Right. I agree. So I had a question for you.
Yes.
I took your advice. I got a Google. I got a Wi-Fi mesh system. I got the Google one. I know that's one of the ones that you were kind of high on, but my friend had it and he helped me.
Hey, you got it. It's free. What's to be disappointed about? That's fine.
That's true. So I have a question. So I have.
And in fact, it's not horrible. I gave it to my daughter. She uses it and she's happy with it. So, but are you having problems with it?
It's working fine with everything in my house. I have like 30 something things hooked up to it, but the problem is. When all of a sudden I tried to put the Sonos on it.
Oh, yeah. Mesh systems in general with Sonos have problems. They're all solvable. There's the good news. But I'm going to put a link in the show notes to the Sonos support thread on this one because there are a variety of ways of solving it. Putting their Sonos in boost mode usually seems to fix it. There is an issue with mesh Wi-Fi that it often uses 5 gigahertz. And the Sonos might see it as 2.5 and use it, but it's not going to work. Things like that. There are a number of solutions. It is absolutely possible to get it to work.
Okay. The weird part is someone told me to shut off the 2.4 on my router, which I did. It didn't solve it. And then the funny part,
it's the other way around, by the way. Shut off the 5. But you don't want to shut those off. You want them.
Right.
So that's not the issue. Yeah, it's it'll work. It's notorious. This has always been a problem with Sonos and Mesh. I use my Sonos with my Eero's, and it works fine. But initially, there were issues. I think some of it's been solved by the addition of firmware updates. But you can totally do it. But keep the Sonos in boost mode is the general thesis that of what you want to do. But I'll tell you what, to make it, there's many steps that you can take to make it easier. I'll put a link to this Sonos support article at techguylabs.com because there's a lot of different things. Enjoy your shopping. you have my sympathy. If you go to instagram.com/miserable_men, you will see all the guys who are like you today sitting in every store, shoe store, ladies store, whatever, every mall has chairs that are really, there's only one purpose: for the poor husbands to sit in and nap. It is my favorite, one of my favorite Instagram feeds. miserable_men. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. We will get back to the phones right after this word from our sponsors. Hey, our show today brought to you by On Deck. This is a really good solution for any business with, you know, a need for capital. And that happens a lot. The holiday season, you've got to staff up. You're not going to see any revenue from it for a few weeks or months, but you need to hire the staff. Or maybe you know demand for your widgets going to be high, but you got to build them, but you haven't sold them yet. There's always, this is, you know, you got to make payroll. You got to pay the rent. You got to pay the utilities. And that's why there's no shame in it. Every business goes through this little cash crunch. And that's why On Deck is awesome. It's 100% committed to small business owners. I'm a small business owner with fast, easy, tailored financing for you. I think a lot of business owners at my size and like me would go to their credit cards, which is a terrible idea. Your interest rate on a credit card is crazy, right? And it's complicated. This is so much easier. Your time is valuable. You can get funding as fast as 24 hours. They've got term loans up to $500,000. Lines of credit up to $100,000. No business collateral required. You can apply online or by phone. You'll get approved in minutes. It will not impact your personal credit. And OnDeck is known and trusted. They've done $10 billion in loans to over 80,000 small businesses. 9.8 out of 10 rating on Trustpilot. They're A-plus rating with a Better Business Bureau. They have great customer service, U.S.-based loan specialists. It's a great solution for a small business with a cash crunch. And it's just great to set it up and have it ready. Have that line of credit ready when you need it. It's a secure financing service business owners everywhere can truly rely on. And by the way, they got a great web platform and mobile app, so it's easy to see, you know, where your loan stands and how you're doing and all that stuff. It's great anytime, anywhere. If you're a small business owner and you need access to capital, no shame, but don't go to your credit card. Go to ondeck.com/techguy right now. And because you're listening, you'll get a free consultation with one of their U.S.-based loan specialists, and I promise no hard sell. They'll just tell you what you need to know. Apply online or by phone. You'll get approved in minutes. OnDeck, ONDECK.com/techguy for your free consultation right now. OnDeck.com/techguy. Yes, and by the way, I say $500,000, but you can go as little as $5,000 too. That's important. I don't want you to think you have to borrow $500,000. You don't. It's great. It's for quick and easy. There's nothing better. Oh, yeah. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm coming down your chimney tonight. No, that would be scary. I promise I will not come down your chimney tonight. We watched Krampus last night, the Christmas horror movie. That's not oh, boy. It's A Wonderful Life. It's not. It's different. Chuck in Rochester, New York. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Chuck.
Hi, Leo. My question was, I've been using Dragon, you know, Nuance's Dragon for many years.
Oh, yeah.
Very happy with it. But I'm using it on my Macintosh, and I had some questions today, so I went to support page, and it said that as of October, they were no longer making or supporting the Macintosh edition. And I was curious what you might recommend for Macintosh for that kind of product.
Oh, man. This kind of is annoying. So Dragon, naturally speaking, was a great company out of Boston that made the best voice recognition software, bar none, on any platform. They made it for Mac and PC. It was just fantastic. But then they got purchased by a company called Nuance. And it was always my fear that, you know, Nuance was buying a bunch of stuff all at once. Nuance decided they wanted to be the king of everything. So they bought, you know, scanning software and, I mean, it goes on and on. So they say they're not supporting Dragon for Mac anymore.
Yes, sir. I think the date was October 24th.
Holy cow.
October 24th this year.
So that's the worst scenario, right? You get a company that's making something really great, gets acquired, and then the company that acquires them says, yeah, and we're not going to do it anymore. Now, they've had it for a while. I see they're still selling it. So that's interesting.
Well, on the website, they...
Oh, maybe not. Because when I tried to buy it, it said server error. That's not a good sign. Server error. Oh, man. You know, they make their money, I think, now in the specialty products for law and medicine and stuff like that.
Yeah, the medicine product's a great product. We use that at work. So, but I also enjoyed using it at home.
Well, the sad thing is when Nuance bought up all of the voice recognition programs in existence, they killed the market. So they're the only ones that make them.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess you're left with Siri, which,
right.
I mean, there is dictation. Maybe this is why they've discontinued it. There is dictation. Both Windows and Mac come natively with voice recognition in their operating systems. So the Mac, if you have to go into settings a little bit to really configure it, but if you press by default, I think it's function twice, it'll launch this and allows you to dictate. It's pretty good, but it doesn't have anywhere near the capabilities, in particular the voice editing capabilities that Dragon had. One of the advantages of Dragon was you could say, stop, back up, fix that, that kind of thing. And that was really useful. Nuance is constantly evaluating its product portfolio to see how we can best meet the needs of customers and business. After much consideration, we've made the difficult decision to discontinue the Dragon Professional Individual for Mac lineup. Your statutory rights are not affected.
Yeah.
Congratulations. No more software updates after 10/22. The Nuance support team will adhere to supporting the software according to support policies outlined above. Yeah, that's pretty much end of life.
Right.
When they say your statutory rights are not affected, that sounds like we don't want to support it, but I guess we got to. Okay. You get 90 days.
What about using something like Parallel or Bootcamp or something?
Yeah, that would work.
Yeah.
That would work. And, of course, Microsoft Office has dictation in it now. Apple has its own dictation. But there is no longer, in my opinion, an equivalent third-party program you can go out and buy. They mm-hmm. they killed that market. They bought them all. There was LearnOut and HouseBee. I think Microsoft bought them. There were three or four of these, and they're all gone. You can go. There's a site we often refer people to called Alternative 2. And if you go to alternative2.net, you can see the alternatives if you search for Dragon, naturally speaking, for it. There aren't many, and they're not, I wouldn't say any of them very good, but you can at least take a look at what's out there.
Okay.
You know where this, okay. It's funny because this, I think Google also has a hand in this because they've started creating very good dictation capability. But what they don't do, any of them, is that thing that Dragon did so well, the editing and the, it was really designed for writing with dictation.
Mm-hmm.
I have no better solution for you than to use the built-in, version in Macintosh. That's probably the best bet.
I'll give that a shot.
Thank you, Nuance. Yeah, boy, I'm disappointed to learn that. That's I'm sorry I don't have a better solution. Maybe somebody will call 8888-ASK-LEO or visit the chat room, irc.twit.tv, or post a response in our website, techguylabs.com. All of those you can do for free. And it really is valuable for us as a group to help each other. I always think of this as kind of like a user group of the airwaves. Your statutory rights are still there. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oy. So look at the Office suite, but the problem is you have to be using Microsoft Office. Parallels will work just fine. Well, by the way, Parallels just got bought by Corel. So try VMware. No, Parallels will probably stick around. I'm sure Corel will keep that going. I don't hate anything Microsoft, but I don't want to say you got to go out and buy Microsoft Office. Johnny Jett is here. He is our traveling guy. He is back home for the holidays. And
well, not my home. It's my wife's home.
Your wife's home in Canada.
Yeah, I'm in Toronto. I grew up in Connecticut. She grew up here.
Perfect. And, are you going to have a white Christmas in Toronto? Is it going to snow?
No, there's no. I actually just looked at the forecast. It keeps changing, but it looked like it said it could snow on Monday.
Oh,
so Christmas here's Eve. Hoping.
That would be perfect.
Here's hoping. It did that last year, actually, which was amazing.
Yeah.
Jack, it just blew his mind because it was really Jack's first time seeing snow.
Oh, I know. Jack is how old now?
Two.
I can't believe he's 2 years old. Wow. Wow.
Yes.
So this will be, does he know that it's Christmas? He kind of knows now.
Yes, he definitely knows now. Last year he did not, but now he knows. And he has a ball with the ornaments on the tree. I mean, all of a sudden you hear a crash and he's just like playing baseball.
Oh, no. Oh, that's worse than a cat. Oh, no. Crash.
It's funny.
Anyway, Johnny.
It's a great time to be here.
I just wish you and yours a very happy holiday. And I know.
Thank you.
You're going to have a wonderful time up there. So, Johnny joins us each week to help us travel like a rock star or like a Google founder. So,
well, I came in last night at midnight, actually after midnight from Miami, but I was happy that I wasn't going to England, especially London Gatwick, which we were.
Oh, the drones shut Gatwick down.
Yeah, so actually, I actually had this on my list to make my app of the week, and I thought this is the best time now. You can, airmap.com. Do you know this one?
No, I don't.
So it's for drone. I'm not a drone pilot, but I had someone write a guest post for me a while ago, and so they recommended this app, airmap.com, and then it's /airmap-for-drones. But if you go in there, I'll put it in the chat room. Actually, I'll do it right now, and I'll also tweet it out. So if you can't find it, but you should be able to.
Complete like situational awareness for drone pilots.
Yes.
Now, I have to say, I had, until I dunked it in the Caribbean, one of the DJI Mavic drones, and it was smart enough to say, I'm not going to fly. You're near an airport.
And that's why I brought this up, because this is what this does.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, you know, the two people that got busted yesterday, or they were arrested, and I was actually surprised. One was a 46-year-old male and a 54-year-old woman, I think. I thought they were either going to be kids or terrorists, but
were they just dumb?
I don't know. I didn't hear the whole story. I don't know if they even.
But they
came out
shut
with
down. This is not the biggest airport
hours.
In London, but
they
it's a big airport. Yeah,
over 100,000 people. I mean, when you're missing a flight during the holidays, you're really in for it, because there's not enough. You know, the planes are going out 100% full.
Yeah.
So there's no seats for you to get on. So these people are definitely missing their not only their holidays, but they could be going for big time important reasons, like, you know, seeing, you know, relatives dying or funerals or weddings or whatever.
They're in jail now, and the offenses, which are disrupting services of civil aviation aerodrome to endanger or likely to endanger safety of operations or persons, carry a maximum lifetime sentence.
It should, and it was ridiculous. But the problem is that, you know, if they don't come up with a solution quick, this is going to be a new trend that we will not want all over, because, you know, they're saying that you can fly these drones 5 miles away, and it's difficult, and you can't shoot them out of the air because they're afraid to, you know, the bullet's going to land somewhere if you miss. And there's, you know, I was reading a lot about it, and you can't jam it. I don't know. They need to figure out a solution quick.
It's a good thing that they have arrested these guys, because what it does is it gives people pause. They may get caught. You might think, oh, I could fly this drone. Nobody will ever figure out it's me. Well, they will.
They're going to catch you. They'll eventually
catch you. Yeah.
But it took time. But so my point is, if you are getting a drone for someone for Christmas, check out this app, because it will show you the safe places that you can fly it all over the world. It's not just in America.
Yeah. In the U.S., when you get a drone, you have to register with the FAA. And that's been the law for 3 years. It's not the case in Britain. That will change.
It will, but also you can't bring drones into some countries. I've had friends have their drones taken away when they're trying to go through different customs.
I didn't try to travel with the Mavic. Well, now it's in its resting place, permanent resting place in the Caribbean Ocean. But
well, keep that in mind if you're buying.
I'm not buying any more drones. I'm done with drones.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
But it's a legitimate hazard, not because, of course, you can take a plane down with it, and so. It's not merely a nuisance. This is a real hazard. It's like the lasers. But I think it'll be solved. Remember, we thought lasers, these pocket lasers, have become a real problem.
Although they still are.
They still are, but they haven't, you know, I mean, we found ways to combat it, I guess.
Right. So, and speaking of Christmas gifts, if you are looking to buy a Christmas gift, here's a great
Don't
website.
Don't get a drone.
No, but here's a great website for someone last minute.
Actually, drones are a great gift, but go ahead.
The website, flightgiftcard.com.
Okay.
So, you know, like Delta, if you go to the grocery store, you can see, you know, they have a Delta card that you can buy for, you know, whatever denomination you want to. But with this one, you can buy it for 300 different airlines. And
so you're giving the gift of flight.
Exactly. So 980 destinations, 70 countries. So
do you specify the destination?
Nope.
Or no?
You don't do anything. So you just put – let's say you put $500 on a gift card you want to give to somebody, and it, you know, all their partners include all the major airlines, Air France, KLM, American, British Airways, Delta, Emirates, you name it. And then they can choose wherever they want to go or how they want to spend it. So if their flight's only $300, they will have $200 left over. So And you can put it – the amount you can put on is between $25 and $10,000. But you can have it emailed right away. So there's still plenty of time for
this
Christmas.
This would be a nice gift for Lisa. Just say, hey, you want a flight to Paris? Here's your gift card.
It does expire after 2 years. Oh. So keep that in mind.
Okay.
So some gift cards don't expire. This one does expire after 2 years. So definitely keep an alert on that. And actually what I do when I get – you know, when an airline, if I change my flight and sometimes I buy a cheaper flight than it was, I'll get a credit. And so what I'll do is I'll forward it. I use follow up then.
Yeah.
And I'll say, you know, remind me in a week or whatever that I need to use this. And I keep every week, I'll just keep reminding myself I still have this credit. So do that as well. And they also send a physical card, but I think that's going to be too late.
It says it'll be like 5 to 10 days for the physical card, but the email is good enough.
The email is definitely good enough. So it's a great travel gift, and if you want to send me one, I'll be happy.
Send Johnny Jeff your Johnny Jet your gift cards. Your travel gift cards, go to johnnyjet.com. That's his website. Actually, that's the gift to you from Johnny, a great website with lots of information about traveling. And, of course, his newsletter, which everyone should subscribe to because it has great travel deals, last-minute travel deals. Is this a bad time of year to travel? Probably is.
Well, this is a busy time and an expensive time. If you wait to a week after New Year's, everything will be on sale. It will be cheap. They're on sale now, and you won't have to spend a lot of money at hotels. You won't have to fight for a pool chair or a beach chair. So I would wait to the week after New Year's.
See, this is why the Russians celebrate Christmas late, because that way you can fly there cheap. This is brilliant. I think
for sure.
Is it true in Montenegro also? There's like a Christmas that's like late January 7th. See, the airfare is cheap because you can go to late Christmas. And then, of course, the Canadians celebrate Christmas in October like everything else. They're just nuts.
Thanksgiving.
I'm just kidding. Thank you, Johnny Jet. Leo Laporte.
Thank you.
The Tech Guy. Happy Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Oh, I hope you have a wonderful holiday. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. If you want to call and ask a question about tech, I'm here for you, baby. Bob in Rolling Hills Estates, California is next. Hey, Bob, Leo Laporte.
Oh, I'm here.
Hey, welcome. Sorry to keep you on hold so long. Thanks for your patience.
Yep, no worries. So I live in an internet access desert. You know I'm surrounded by a million people within 10 miles.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And I have Frontier.
Some might call it an oasis, but okay. Depends on your attitude towards the internet, but okay.
Right. So I have the mispleasure of using Frontier telecommunications. And
I'm so sorry about that. Okay. A lot of people in the Southland is commiserating with you right now, Bob.
Yes. And they offer me for $30 a month a magnificent 700 kilobits per second.
What?
Internet X.
What? That's not usable. I mean, I remember when I first got an ISDN line, but I was on a 56K modem, and I suddenly have 128 kilobits per second, how happy I was. And I thought I was, you know, living in the fast lane. But those days were a long time ago. So you don't have cable available to you. Is that right?
I have cable, but I just do not need. I have 200 TV channels on.
But the cable company probably offers internet as well. Do they not?
They do. But yeah, they do.
But that would be your fastest bet on internet.
Yes.
Frontier is DSL, and this is the DSL issue: is your distance from the central office. DSL speeds decline precipitously after a couple of miles away from the central office.
They didn't even offer DSL till 4 years ago.
Yeah.
So I'm at the 10,000-foot point, so they declared me not worthy of having DSL.
Just too far away,
Yeah, so I got an offer from Dish a while back to use satellite internet.
Yep, that works pretty much anywhere you have a view of the southern sky.
Yeah, but if you live in Frontier Telecommunications world,
And in California, where the PUC responds to everyone but the citizens of California, they've got it fixed up, so I cannot get
what
television. I cannot get satellite internet service where I live.
What? How can they block Dish? They won't sell it to you in that area?
They'll sell me Dish, but they won't let me use the internet access or the telephone service.
The return service.
Yes.
Well, boy, that is talk about a monopolistic practice.
Yeah, well, this is California, and you kind of expect stuff like that. But that was astounding when they told me I could not have.
So this is Dish says to you, because you're in a frontier area, and I don't mean frontier as in the Wild West. I mean an area that frontier is the CLEC or the local provider. You can't get Dish internet services
or phone service. So I'm not.
Well, I understand that you can't get phone service, but you can't get internet service.
Nope.
Okay. Well, it sounds like your only choice then, and this isn't, by the way, I'm sad to say, the state of internet in the United States is shameful. We invented the darn thing, but often that's the case, by the way, because, you know, ours is the oldest system, and so there's a lot of weird, you know, rules. But in most areas, at best, you have a duopoly, the phone company and the cable company. And in many areas, you don't even have that. And you're one of the areas where you're really, your only choice is the cable company. And you don't have to get cable TV, though. You can just get cable internet.
You sure?
Yes. Now, it'll cost you more. They don't like it because they want to sell you. You're right. They want to sell you those 200 channels of nothing.
Yep.
And they want your bill to get up over $100. But in most, who's the cable provider in that area?
Cox.
So I would say I want internet only, Cox. They do offer that. Unless, you know, you're in I mean, I've never heard of this where you can't get Dish because the phone company won't cooperate. That seems like a FCC violation. But again, we don't really have any FCC rules anymore. So
it could be a Cox thing. It could be the cable company here has managed to find a way to not let you.
No, Cox sells internet only. They don't want you to buy it because they don't make as much money. And what they do, what most cable companies will do is say, well, okay. Oh, if you insist, you don't want a triple play. We'll tell you internet only, but it'll cost you more, and they'll charge tack an extra $10 on it. But they should send it to you. And that will be the only decent internet available to you. If you tell me that the best you can get on DSL is 700 kilobits, that's not even usable. Modern internet.
No.
Yeah, modern internet. You can't.
And until 4 years ago, I couldn't even get that.
Yeah.
I had dial-up.
So I would check. There are other satellite providers out there. I would check with Exceed and see if their Wild Blue will work. The problem with satellite internet, it's not going to be cheaper. You're going to end up buying gear, and it's going to end up costing you more. And there are limitations because they have limited bandwidth, and so as a result, they have fair use rules and things like that that are going to impinge how you use it. But Wild Blue is a pretty good service. So I would go to exceed.com and see if you can get that. It may be that Frontier, whatever Frontier has negotiated with Dish, didn't negotiate it with Exceed. that's the best satellite provider in general anyway. It's better than Dish, in my opinion.
Okay, I will search all the satellite.
Yeah, but if not, Cox might be your best. But the other thing is there may be sometimes occasionally there'll be strange line of sight WISPs, wireless internet service providers. They tend to use microwaves and things like that. And you might check around for that as well.
I got cell phone coverage at my home a year ago.
Yeah.
It didn't even work until a year
ago. But you live in a beautiful, beautiful area, right?
It certainly is. It's like not living near a big city.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
You're in an internet oasis where there is none. None of those annoying people on Twitter to bug you. None of that silliness on Facebook to bother about. You're in an internet dead zone.
But it's not the case because you can. I know you can get Cox Internet and only. It may be $80 a month. Exceed won't be much cheaper, but at least you can look at that and see if it works.
Okay.
I am shocked. I got to look into this. That Frontier in any way, that seems to be a clear violation of. Oh, right. We don't have any net neutrality rules. That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
That seems to me to be a clear violation of FCC rules. But
well, it's part of this monopoly that cable companies.
It's terrible. It's terrible. It's why we have, even though we invented the internet here and we deserve, I think, to have the best internet in the world, we don't. We have among the worst in developed nations, and it really is historically because these companies have monopolies. And the
here's an irony in all of this. I'm an advisor to a company that makes communication satellites in geosync orbit. And I can't use them.
Well, try Exceed. That's hysterical. Well, you do need internet, it sounds like. I think it would be a good thing.
Yeah, it would.
Yeah. All right. Well, good luck. I'm going to have to look into that. That's stunning to me that Frontier could. It doesn't surprise me that they'd try, that they would be allowed to. It really shocks me. That's just not right. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's take a little time out while I shake my head in dismay over Frontier. And we'll get back to the calls right after this. Our show today brought to you by our fine sponsor, keeping you safe for years, the great folks at Simply Safe. I'm a fan of Simply Safe. I know you are as well. It's home security done right. Now, this holiday season, just think of the value of all those gifts under your tree, all those electronics in your home. And you know the bad guys know that. They're casing the joint right now. Simply Safe Home Security. Family home security that's easy. You've been putting it off, I know. It's like organizing the garage. Oh, yeah, one of these days. No. Easy. You can do it all yourself, and it's really affordable. Simply Safe has gotten rid of all the reasons you might be putting off home security. No contract, ever. So it's month to month. There's no price markup. There's no middleman. You're buying the gear from Simply Safe. You're installing it yourself. By the way, since Simply Safe originally, not anymore, but originally was created by renters for renters, it's easy to move your entire Simply Safe setup to another house, stick them all up again. They have all the sensors you want, motion, glass break, water, so you can put one near the water heater in case the pipe breaks or something like that. You don't have to worry about an installation window from a repair guy or coming out and traipsing through your house and putting ladders on the floor. Their system is engineered to do one thing perfectly and protect you. If a storm takes out your power, it doesn't matter. Simply Safe still works. If an intruder thinking he's smart cuts your phone line, you know, it's like Home Alone, right? Don't worry. Simply Safe still works. If they destroy your keypad or your siren, no. Simply Safe will still get you the help you need. 24/7 monitoring at the lowest price anywhere. Look, I know you've been putting this off. Don't do it any longer. Simply Safe makes it easy. Go to simplysafe.com/twit. My fellow procrastinators, don't put it off. There's no time like the present, especially for the holiday season. It'd be nice when you're cozy and warm at home to know that you're protected. Simply Safe. .com/twit, or if you go over the river and through the woods to grandmother's house, to know your house is protected. SimplySafe.com/twit. Get the protection you need today. Don't put it off. SimplySafe.com/twit. You'll be impressed, I think. It's a really nice, cleverly designed system that really works and is very affordable. There's no reason not to have it. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers. The internet, home theater, we talk about digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, helping you buy the perfect gift for the geek in your life. It's all here. 8888 Ask Leo is my number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, we have callers from all over the world because we have listeners, thanks to the internet, all over the world except for certain rural areas. 8888 Ask Leo. Line 2 is Rob in Columbus, Ohio. Hello, Rob.
Hey, Leo. So nice to talk to you.
Well, thanks for calling.
I used to watch I used to watch you on the LG4 network.
Oh, Rob.
And I must say you have an age of the day.
Well, that's good. Keep up the praise, and maybe I'll give you extra special treatment.
Okay. My question is, I cannot get Dolby Audio out of my streaming TV.
Hmm.
And I was wondering, I've been through all the hoops and everything. I was wondering if you could recommend a streaming device, a good streaming device where I could get my. I'm getting 4K from my
most of
not Dolby Atmos.
Yeah. Oh, you want Atmos?
Yeah. I'm not getting the audio. I'm getting my 4K signal, but I'm not getting. I have an optical. The only output I have on my TV is an optical, which does not support Dolby Atmos.
Well, there's Dolby and there's Dolby Atmos. So let's get this straight. So what happens when the data comes out, the bits come out of that pipe, is they can be just straight bits, which sometimes they call PCM, or they can be encoded. Which means they're packaged up in such a way that they can be then, by an appropriate device, divided up. So if it's Dolby Surround, for instance, they can be, it's coming out of the TV, out of the optical Dolby Surround. It'll be encoded in such a way that a Dolby Surround aware amplifier or soundbar can say, oh, okay, left, right, center, rear, surround, left, right, that kind of thing. It'll break it up. And it has information, in other words, in the stream about where to place each bit of the sound. I'm sure your TV, if it's a 4K TV, can output some form of encoded audio. Have you looked in the audio menu to see what choices you have?
Yes, I've done that.
So what choices
I'm only getting 5.1 is the max I can get out of my TV.
So that means your TV doesn't do Atmos, and that's not surprising. Most TVs don't. Atmos is a newer technology, so you're getting Dolby Surround or Dolby Digital. But I bet you get both of those, but you're not getting Atmos because it's a newer technology. So you need, if you want Dolby Atmos, and by the way, in order to do Atmos, you have to have then some sort of amplifier receiver that understands it. That's not the same as, and Dolby maybe has confused this a little bit, but they're different kinds of Dolby. That's, I guess, the point. And yours is doing some, but not all of those. So if you want Atmos to play back, you need Atmos encoded audio coming out of the player. You need an Atmos receiver that can handle it. And you need the appropriate number of speakers, including two up-firing speakers or two speakers in the ceiling, because what makes Atmos is this surround not only is in a flat plane around you, but is in a goes above you as well. So you have to have all of that. Now, assuming that you have that capability in the receiver and the speakers, I'm not going to address that. To get Atmos encoded audio, you need a device that does Atmos. And only a few of the streaming devices do that. So Roku, if you get the new Roku, the Stick does Atmos. You'll have to look. Various Rokus do Atmos, but you'll have to get the devices. Not all of them do. I know the Stick does. Roku Premier Plus does. The newest Apple TV, I believe they just enabled Atmos, but let me look. In other words, you have to check the streaming device. Yeah, they just added Atmos to their 4K Apple TV. So you're going to have to get the most expensive, the top-of-the-line Apple TV. That will have Atmos. We'll put this in the show notes. Thank you to the chat room. Krampus X, which I believe was the chat mod formerly known as Scooter X, says Netflix has a list. Netflix supports Dolby Atmos, but you have to have the right hardware. But they don't actually have a list of the hardware. Oh, yeah, they do. Which devices support Dolby Atmos? Apple TV 4K with tvOS 12 or later. LG OLED TVs 2017 or later, means mine doesn't. The Pixela 4K Smart Tuner, Sony's Bravia Android TVs 2018 models,
Xbox One, One S, and Xbox 10. That's it. So those are that's where you'll get your Dolby encoded audio. And of course, I should have added, you need a Dolby encoded source, Atmos encoded source. And that's, by the way, why Netflix is talking about this, because Netflix is, in some of its titles, select titles, Atmos encoded. So when they say, we'll put a link to this Netflix page. When they say Dolby Atmos and Netflix, it means you have to have a title that supports it. You have to have a Dolby Atmos capable audio system, speakers, etc. You need to have a plan that supports streaming in Ultra HD. You need a Netflix capable device with Atmos support. And, probably should throw this in, you'll need enough bandwidth to stream in high quality. So Atmos doesn't get turned on unless you've got enough bandwidth to do it and a high quality video signal. But again, the list is good, and we'll put this in the show notes. Thank you, Krampus X. Richard, West LA, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Leo. Good to talk.
Thanks for calling.
Leo, I had taken some pictures on my camera and went into the memory card. I put the memory card into my computer with a little device. The pictures were copied, but I can't email them.
You can't email them? Why not? What happens when you try to email them?
I hit email, and it goes through Google, apparently, because Google asked me for my name, you know, my handle, and my password, which I put in, and everything was fine.
Ah, I see what you're
saying.
I
loaded it all up, and then I get a message saying, can't work this right now, try again later. And I've tried again later about four times.
Huh. So you're a Windows 10 machine?
Yes.
Okay. It's set up, it sounds like, to have, you're a Gmail user, I take it. It's set up to have Gmail be your default mail client. Is that true? Is that what you'd like?
Yes.
Okay. Because it may be that if you were using another mail client, Outlook or something, that this would work, but it may be that Gmail is not happy with it. In general, I don't really prefer not to attach files this way anyway. If the only place these files exist is on your hard drive, well, that's what you're going to have to do. But attaching large files, well, you've heard me say 100 times, don't open email attachments. So that's problem number one. Email attachments are the most common vector for viruses and malware. But number two is it's easy enough, especially with pictures. They can be so big to jam up somebody's mailbox. A lot of mailboxes only support 15 megabytes. That's not much. Easy to jam that up. So in general, I think it's a... I would say strong recommendation that what you do is you put these pictures up on Google's photos library, right? Upload them to Google Photos and then send a link rather than trying to send the individual images. If you can't send the images, perhaps they're not JPEG. Perhaps they're most likely they're too big. The Gmail's saying, hey, you can't send something that big for the very reasons I spoke about. And also, I have to warn you that many people's email clients will say, I'm not going to accept attachments. That's dangerous. So the best way to get something through is upload it to, you know, if you don't want to use Google Photos, use Dropbox or some other cloud solution, some place in the cloud that your correspondence can easily access. Google Photos is a great choice, in my opinion, because they'll let you create an album and send the link. You can send 100 photos with one link. It's a really much more efficient way to do it. But it does require an extra step on your part. Upload them to Google Photos. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. We'll take a little break. Come back with more of your calls in just a little bit. Don't forget our website, techguylabs.com. No sign up. It's free. But all the info you need is right there. See, you can count on Big Pee-wee for good holiday music. None of that barking dogs Christmas stuff. 88, our musical director, Damien Big Pee-wee, it's great to have you. And your daughter, what's your daughter's name? She's in studio with us today. Hi, Mylea. How old's Mylea, Big Pee-wee? She's a little Pee-wee. He says 11 going on 40. Hi, Mylea. Thank you for keeping Daddy company on the holidays here. Thanks for keeping me company, too. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. Glad you're here. Ernie in Los Angeles, you're next. Leo Laporte. Hi, Ernie.
Uh, How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm getting along.
Glad to hear it.
I couldn't help but notice how close Bob's problem down in Rancho, was it 10th?
Yeah, Rancho
State.
Yes.
Was to mine.
You're in a rural area as well. But wait a minute, you're in Los Angeles.
I most definitely am not. I'm in 3-4.
Yeah.
You know, roughly where La Cienega crosses the 10, which is about as...
You have an infinite number of choices, right?
At least theoretically. The problem is trying to decide which one.
Yeah, yeah.
And what I'm wondering is if there's anybody who has a website...
There is.
...that has some means of pricing out various odd internet suppliers.
Yeah, I'll tell you who I recommend and use. This is a big issue because it's very hard to get that information otherwise, right? Who provides internet service in this area? Remember that all the internet service you have to choose from will come in three flavors. You have two big pipes in your house already. One's your cable, if you have cable, and one is your phone, if you have phone. And then you have a third choice, which is wireless. And there are a variety of wireless providers. Cable and phone are a little bit more limited. Cable will just, there's only one cable company for any given area. So whoever your cable TV company is, that's the one you'd go to for cable internet service. Phone's a little different. You have an incumbent carrier for the phone line, AT&T or Verizon or Frontier, whoever that is. But the FCC some years ago said that these companies also have to give third-party DSL providers access to those lines. So companies like our former sponsor, DSL Extreme, also will offer internet service, but it'll all come in on the phone line. So your local phone company will have internet service, and then there will be a variety of other companies offering service. But there is something to remember about that kind of DSL service, that's what it's called, is it sits on the phone company's copper wires. So they're responsible for the copper wires leading into your house. What the FCC said is, well, a company like DSL Extreme can put a switch in the phone company's office and then advertise that they offer internet service through that switch. But really, the infrastructure is right up to the central office owned by the phone company. And sometimes phone companies are not super cooperative. They only cooperate as much as they absolutely have to by law, because they don't really like it that these other companies are using their hardware to give you internet service. They'd prefer to sell it to you directly. So there's always that tension between third-party DSL providers and the phone company. And then finally, when you get to wireless, there's a lot of flavors. There's, of course, the cellular companies are offering residential, in some cases, residential internet. But you may also be able to get a microwave link or other kinds of links. And if you're really lucky, some people, a small number, have fiber available as well. Verizon offered Fios. Frontier has Fios. That'll fiber to the home. That is another choice. So where can you find out what's available to you and get reviews? My favorite place is an independent website. Remember, there are a lot of, this is very confusing. You'll go on the web and you'll say internet reviews. You'll see a lot of sites that are essentially advertisements. They get paid by the companies they're, quote, reviewing. And, I don't like that very much. I'm very careful to preserve my independence and integrity. And I really hate it when people on the internet pretend to be, independent and, in fact, aren't. But there's one site I believe in, and that's DSL Reports. So if you go to DSLReports.com and you click the Reviews tab, you can put in your zip code and see, first of all, one of the most valuable things is you'll immediately see what's available. And it's usually pretty, my experience has been it's pretty complete. And then you'll see independent reviews by users of what is out there. They even score it. There are other places to go. That's the one I like. But that's and I'll let others in the chat room mention and so forth. Brett Glass, who's a WISP in, I think it's Wyoming. He is a wireless internet service provider in Wyoming, says there's a FCC national broadband map. I don't trust the FCC any farther than I can throw them, but
at least in something like this, they're probably accurate. So you can see their national broadband map will give you some idea of what broadband's available. But we'll not give you reviews, as it shouldn't. So that's why I like DSL reports. The good news is where you live, you should have, you know, several good choices. Much of about 80% of America only has two choices, the cable company and the phone company. And that's one of the reasons we have such terrible internet service. Yeah, you could search by address. This is nice. Fixed broadband deployment. So I can enter in my street address. This is nice. This is broadband map. That's with FCC.
Is that with the broadband report?
Yeah, no, broadband reports is the same as DSL reports. They're good. But this is the FCC's, and I wasn't aware of this, broadbandmap.fcc.gov. That'll just tell you what's available. It won't tell you what's good. That, for that, you need reviews. Okay?
Well, I'll certainly try out.
Yeah, good luck.
Both of those.
Yeah, good luck.
Thank you.
I think that's DSL reports used to be broadband reports. Same site, different names, that's all. But I think both of them are quite good. I guess the FCC is decommissioning its national broadband map. Oh, Lord. and it's not been updated. So forget it. Forget I even mentioned it. Thank you, FCC. Another fine job by our federal government. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. Yeah, let's have a rock and roll Christmas. Just like we used to do. I don't know if I ever had a rock and roll Christmas. Maybe I should have my first rock and roll Christmas. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask Leo, the phone number. Duke on the line from Redondo Beach. Hey, Duke.
Hi. Thanks for answering. I've got an external Western Digital external hard drive that it's a customer of mine, a good friend, and it's crashed, and I usually use Steve Gibson's program to save hard drives.
Yes, sir.
Which I got from you a long time ago.
SpinRite, yeah.
Anyway, this time it's a USB. I plug it in, no lights, no sound.
Ah.
So.
Yeah, you can't SpinRite something if you can't see it, can you?
Yeah, if I can't see it, I can't see it.
Yeah. So that means probably the enclosure died. Do you know what I'm saying here?
Yeah.
So when you have an external drive, you have two things. You have a regular hard drive that would be just like in your computer or laptop, but it's stuck inside what we call an enclosure that takes that probably SATA drive, almost certainly SATA drive, and turns it into a USB drive. In general, in order to run SpinRite on it anyway, we'd like to access the SATA port directly because you get more information. But you can SpinRite a USB drive unless the enclosure has died, and that sounds like that's exactly what's happened. If you plug it into different machines and it doesn't wake up, you don't see it, nothing's happening, and the enclosure died. The good news is that's probably an easy thing to get around. So any tech guy like you, Duke, should have a device that comes from there's a number of companies that make them. I get it from a company called NewerTech, NewerTech. At newertech.com. They call it their USB universal drive adapter. It's $45. It's cheap. And what it is it's just a little connector with a USB cable on one side and all the different kinds of drive connectors on the other side. And what you'll do is you'll open up this broken USB drive and take the real drive inside, the Easter egg, the pearl in the oyster inside, the SATA drive, and it could be a laptop style or a desktop style, it doesn't matter, and you'll plug it into this universal drive adapter. It works with any 2.5, 3.5, or even if you have one, 5.25-inch drive. You plug it in, and it turns it into a USB 3 drive. Now, you wouldn't want to run it that way forever, right? Because all the electronics are exposed. It's not designed for a permanent fix. What it's designed to do is then plug it in. First thing you'll see is maybe the drive's okay. It was just the enclosure. In fact, almost certainly it was just the enclosure that died. Unless he, dunked it in the water or, took it swimming or something.
Right.
But if it just died one day, probably just the enclosure. So you open up the enclosure. There will be a way to do it. It might not be obvious. You might have to pry it apart. There'll be maybe hidden screws under the – sometimes they hide the screws under the rubber feet. Sometimes that's a little tricky. But once you open it up, you'll see a normal drive in there. You connect – and you can go down to Fry's and get these. There's a – you can mail order them. But you connect this drive adapter. Or your other choice – this is the cheap way to do it. The other choice would be buy a new USB enclosure. And just take, but you kind of want to find out what kind of drives in there and stuff to make sure you get the right enclosure. And I would want to make sure the drive worked before I did that. So this newer tech, if it sounds like Duke, you do this once in a while for people. If you do, then this newer tech universal drive adapter will be very handy.
Okay, that sounds wonderful. Now my problem is, and I agree with what you're saying, this Western Digital out drive, external drive, doesn't have any screws. All it's got on the bottom of it is a four black plastic prongs that are...
Oh, yeah. That's the chat room saying, yeah, on these WD drives, often you have to break the plastic tabs to get in.
That's what it looks like I'm going to have to do because I can't get it open. I was going to take it out, use a spin drive, spin right on the other thing.
Yeah. So you do that anyway with spin right. You're right. You can use spin right on a USB drive, but it's always better to do it directly to the SATA port. So you knew this already. So yeah, you're going to it sounds like you're going to have to break that case.
Yeah, it sounds like that's cheaper than 500 plus.
Yeah.
Send it to.
No, don't send it to Drive Savers, cuz all they're going to do is exactly what you just said. They're going to break the tabs, open it up, connect it to one of these things, take the data off. It'll take them 15 minutes, and they'll charge you.
Yeah, 500 plus.
500 smackaroos.
Yeah.
Do you do this for other people?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I do.
So this is anybody who does any tech. This, you know, there's just a few things you really need. This USB universal drive adapter is one. I have one in my little kit that I carry around.
Yeah, it looks like that sounds pretty good. Yeah. I appreciate it. And by the way, I've learned a lot listening to you. One of the things I gotta tell you that. I was disappointed about. I set up a dentist for offline backup.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to the guy that you always talk about.
Our sponsor, Carbonite.
Carbonite. And one of the things I found out was I couldn't do was in the dental programs he has, there's a bunch of blank files that are put in there by the manufacturer of the program.
Yeah.
And it causes a problem with the name of your company.
Carbonite.
Carbonite.
Obviously not memorable. I'm not doing my job. Yeah, you know, one of the things with Carbonite, when you first set it up, it will have built-in defaults for what it backs up. But if it doesn't back up the key thing that you want, and sometimes that's the case, you can go in and change that. You can say, oh, no. I want those, you know, those dumb files that you're ignoring because you think they're just temp files. Those turn out to be important. Please back those up, too.
Yeah, that was the problem, but it wasn't temp files. It was blank files.
Yeah, and it wouldn't, I mean, I don't.
It wouldn't back them up, and if it
that's
wouldn't
interesting.
Back them up, then I'm dead.
Won't back up. It may be if it says, well, there's nothing in this. Why should I back it up? That's interesting. They can't really be blank. They must. That's interesting. Oh, maybe they're license files. Maybe that's for licensing purposes.
No, these are just blank files. I talked to a tech at the place.
Oh, Carbonite. Okay.
Yeah.
And he said, we can't do it. We won't do it.
No, he says, I can't do it. He says, the files have to have something or a name or something. They can't just be blank, but unfortunately.
Oh, I get it. Yeah. So for that, you want an image backup of some kind. Yeah. Because they're looking at the file system. If it's not part of the file system, I don't know how they would even know how to back that up.
That's the problem.
Yeah. Yeah. So for that, you'd need an image backup that kind of like Spinrite. One of the reasons Spinrite's a great hard drive recovery utility is it doesn't care about the file system. It goes sector by sector.
Right.
And
that's
so,
why I like it so much.
Yeah, there are backup programs. You know that, Norton Ghost, they're imaging programs. That's what they do. They don't look to see what's on the sector. They just get it.
Yeah, but I've saved probably 7 out of 10 hard drives using Spinrite.
Oh, Steve Gibson will be happy to hear that, Duke. That's awesome.
Yeah, please tell him because
I will.
I've saved a lot of people from a lot of disappointments for a cheap little program I got from him, I don't know, 10 years ago, maybe more.
Yeah, he wrote in assembly language. It's tiny. Yeah. And it, what it really does, it's really simple, but it works.
That's
something no other drive recovery will do. It just goes through the drive one sector at a time, and it uses the hardware to try to read that sector. And unlike your operating system, it won't give up. Your operating system, after 10 times, will say, well, I can't read that. I give up. SpinRite will keep working until it reads it and then move it and say, don't use this sector anymore.
Hey, build a fence around it so you can't.
Yep, and that's it's a really clever technique. Steve invented it. Folks from a little company at the time called the Norton Utilities said to him, hey, we want something like that. He said, I'm not selling.
Yeah.
So they wrote check disk, basically, which works kind of, but not as well as SpinRite. GRC.com. We'll give him a little plug. GRC.com. That's a great little program.
They really do good. And he put together a nice little program that you can go and read all about it, see all about it, and he describes exactly what you got to do with SpinRite in order to make it work, on a hard drive or
Steve's
or
a great guy. Yeah, he does he hosts our Security Now program, and he's a legend in the business. Duke, great to talk to you. Leo, happy Christmas. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, the GizWiz, coming up. Bailey and Mylea's dad swinging us today. The disco hits, they just keep on coming. It's good times. These are the good times. Our disco man is here. He's gone from satin to flannel.
Yes.
but Dick DiBartolo, Mads Maddest writer in the GizWiz, his disco days, not over, but the fire has been banked. Right?
A little bit. Yeah, no. I mean, I just bought a fog machine for myself for Christmas.
Did you really? So,
yeah.
That's awesome. So what are you got family coming for the holidays?
Exactly. Nice. Exactly. So if the conversation gets dull, I'll just fog them all in and say, you know, the weather's terrible. Let's all go home.
Hello. Are you there? Aunt Mary, are you there? I can't see you. And Dick's going to be, he told me he's making his world famous pineapple upside down cake. It's a Christmas miracle.
Yes.
Because you make it upside down, then you turn it over, and lo and behold, pineapples.
It is kind of amazing that it happens almost, I guess, every time it has happened, so it's great.
You've never had a failed, like, pineapple right side up cake? It's never...
No, okay. No, but I did that in the Poseidon Adventure satire from Mad.
Did you
the
really?
The chef is in the upside down, and he said, you know what, I guess I better be baking pineapple right side up cake.
I think that may be one of your most famous Mad Magazine parodies. Dick is also Mad's maddest writer for years. That Poseidon Adventure. What was it called?
The Poopside Down Adventure.
The Poopside Down Adventure.
Yeah, because, you know, ships have a poop deck.
Yes, so, and it was upside down.
Yeah, exactly.
And Shelley Winters is in it and everybody. I love it.
Yes.
I love it. Famous for his movie parodies for many years. So Dick joins us, not to talk about that, although we do love talking about Mad Magazine, but also... talk about a crazy gizmo or gadget that he has unearthed.
Yes, and so Dennis and I at CVS, I'm figuring people are looking for last-minute gifts. So I thought, wait, they have a whole As Seen on TV section.
CVS has a Has Seen on TV section?
Yes, exactly.
I'm on my way.
I was reading that 90% of all As Seen on TV gadgets are sold in stores.
Oh,
so and so Dennis said, you know, you never did a gadget specifically mainly geared toward women. As I picked up the Easy Makeup 3x magnification glasses with LEDs.
They're no good. You're wearing glasses. How are you supposed to do your makeup?
Well, wanting to try everything.
No.
Yes, and haven't been told.
Dick.
It's more than 25 years I've been on World News Now, Regis, Good Morning America for 5 years. Every makeup person has said, you must darken your eyebrows. If I'm not in the makeup room,
yeah,
tell whoever does your makeup, darken your... And I figure, I can do this myself.
Well, Dick, now that I've seen the picture on gizwiz.biz, your website, I don't think you ought to do this yourself.
No, I thought they were darker than the makeup people.
What happened to the middle of the mustache?
Well, I thought, you know what? Maybe I should do the whole stash. And then I thought, you know, I could be here through Christmas. So,
what are you using, a magic marker?
You know, I don't know. I said, Dennis, what can I darken my eyebrows with? So he said, I have paint. So, Leo, these...
So these glasses do solve that one problem I perceived, which is how you can make up your eyes when you're wearing makeup glasses.
Yeah, there you go. They are so cheaply made. The first set, one side, the LED was broken. So I brought it back and got another pair. And when I went to... So basically, it's one magnifying glass. You put it on your right eye.
Oh, no.
And then you can see in a mirror your left eye clear.
Oh, no. And then you flip it over.
Yes, except when I flipped it over, the lens fell out on the second pair.
Okay, but they're only $14.95.
Yeah, online $14.95 plus $6 shipping.
Oh,
another one free if you add another $6 shipping. So that's $27. Anyway,
How much did you pay at CVS? You
don't have to pay for this. I paid $14.99, but I had a 30% off coupon, so I paid something like...
And they still weren't worth it.
No, they are really garbage. Online, on Amazon, they have tons of knockoffs without the LED lights, but at a company called Kikaland.com, they're $4.
You know, I'm looking at the model on the website where she's flipping the lens over, and I could just read her mind thinking, how did I get this gig, and how do I get out of here as quickly as possible?
Exactly. And if you believe in the third eye, you can just leave it up the way she's doing.
Leave it up. By the way, it says 3X magnification. That's not that much.
Well, you know what? Close up it is.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, but online...
Obviously, you needed more to do your makeup.
Yeah, I did. on Amazon, they let you pick, like, 2 magnification, 2.5, 3.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, I'm going to leave it to makeup. I have to take a...
I wouldn't use a Sharpie next time. In fact, I don't even know if you'll be able to get those eyebrows off. Those might be permanent. Really,
Time tomorrow.
So they always darken your eyebrows, huh?
They do darken my eyebrows.
Interesting. What do they do about your head?
They take a roller and they have a gallon of makeup stuff. They save it just for me, and they roll my head. They do that in 30 seconds. I'm finished.
Remember when airbrushes came in? I don't know if they still use those. They still use them on World News Now?
No. You know, I never had airbrush makeup.
Briefly, when they first went to HDTV, the makeup artists at Live basically it was the same kind of airbrush you use to paint model kits, right? But instead of putting paint in it, they'd do some sort of soluble makeup, and it'd go brrrr. And they'd paint your face with it. And then you'd all be one color, and then they'd have to fill in the gaps.
I see.
It was only there for a few months, and then they got rid of it. So I have a feeling it was a failed experiment. If only they'd had the makeup glasses.
Yeah, exactly. When we were doing Tech TV, this would have been a godsend.
Yeah, we had to do our own makeup.
Yeah.
That's when I knew Tech TV was doomed. It started when they got rid of hair and makeup, because then we had to do our own. But the final blow was when they took the oatmeal out of the kitchen. They used to have free oatmeal. And I figured if they can't afford free oatmeal, this company is in really bad shape. Dick DiBartolo, I hope you have a wonderful Christmas.
Oh, you too, sir. Yeah. We're all taking a week off.
Do you have an LED lit Christmas tree?
Absolutely. Behind, I have a fiber optic Christmas tree, a famous one.
Oh, that's the one that they bought for the movie, right?
Yes, exactly. So it's 10 years old this Christmas. It was, I think, Pride and Glory was the movie. And they decorated my boat for Christmas in July. And after the shoot was over, I think Ed Norton was on a boat behind me looking into my boat where that tree was.
So they didn't even shoot on your boat. You were background.
I was background. Okay. Ed Norton, it's Christmas Eve, and Ed Norton is sadly looking across at people partying on my boat.
Did you actually have to have a party?
They had the party.
Oh. Yeah. It's all production assistance.
I was going to be in it until the shoot was put off till 3 a.m. And I thought, you know, party yourself.
Let the production assistants do it. Exactly. Is that the tree behind you? Is that the tree?
That's the actual tree.
I've heard this story for years.
The next day, the people came down and the guy said, listen, we are throwing everything out. Anything you want, it'll help us if you keep it. I said, I like the tree.
Nice.
And then, you know what? Last year, I relit it using LED, an LED light source.
That has been a huge change, hasn't it? LED lighting instead of the old bulbs that would burn out.
The tree, you know, used to be halogen and the base got hot. Ugh. Now the LED, it's great. It's brighter and it's super.
Dick DiBartolo, gizwiz.biz. Have a wonderful holiday. Last few times you play the What the Heck Is It contest, get on over there. Your chance to win an autographed Mad magazine. But a contest ends at the end of the year.
Yeah.
And we will see you in the new year, Dickie D.
You have a super holiday.
Thank you, Dick. Take
care. Okay, buddy.
Happy Christmas to Big Pee-wee, Bailey, and Mylea, and all of you. Kim Schaffer, have a great holiday. We'll see you next time. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.